Welcome back, everyone, to the Mindful Edge, where we have real conversations about resilience, relationships, and the messy, meaningful work of being human. I'm Cecil, and I'm going to pass it to my co-host.
Hey, everybody. I'm Dr. P, the leadership coach. And today's conversation is one that is deeply personal, vulnerable, and honestly, it's something that is really necessary. We're talking about postpartum mental health, co-parenting, and what it looks like when family doesn't unfold the way that you hoped it would. Before we begin, though, we must offer a gentle trigger warning. In this episode, we'll discuss topics like postpartum depression, emotional challenges, difficulty with co-parenting. and I take a deep sigh with that. If you're in a tender place or these topics bring up hard emotions, we invite you to care for yourself however you need to. Pause, take a deep breath, or step away and come back when you're ready. This space is about healing, not perfection.
So today we have a guest. We are honored to have Alicia Garces today. She's a case manager and therapist at a local behavioral health agency, RFS Behavioral Health. She's a master's student currently. What, you got about another semester left to go before you're done?
Yes. Ooh, only a semester?
No, well, I graduate in spring.
Okay.
So yeah, another semester.
Yeah. Okay.
I knew I wasn't crazy, guys. And then she's also a mother of three beautiful boys, right? Aww.
Yes, and then I have two bonus babies now.
Okay.
So five.
Aww. And so she specializes in relationships, helping families and children currently in high school, while also helping herself. So thank you for coming to the Mindful Edge today.
Thank you for having me.
We're just going to get into it, girl. Okay. So when we talk about postpartum, most people think about the baby, right? But for many of us, it's really about the identity shift, who we are after we give birth.
Yes.
What we've lost. How do we find ourselves again? Can you share what's often misunderstood about postpartum and mental health?
I just think it's the factor of nobody talks about it. Mm-hmm. So as a woman, it's for centuries, right? In the sense of you have a baby, you take care of the baby, and you just go on about your day.
Yeah.
Nobody really understands, unless you're having a baby, the underlying issues that come with it.
Yeah.
And that is the struggle, right? The struggle of... you brought this beautiful life to this world, but internally.
You're doing backflips or cartwheels or whatever.
All of it.
Yes.
You mentally, right, you're just not there.
Yep.
You want to be happy, and in moments you are happy.
Yeah.
However, you're crying all the time. Your hormones are... shifting. So for example, I had C-sections.
Oh, great.
Yes.
I had an emergency C-section.
Same.
Yeah.
So my first baby, I was 19.
Oh, wow. And had a C-section.
Yes. I had to have an emergency C-section. I was out of it for 2 days after my C-section. I was on morphine. I had to have 17 staples.
Oh, shoot.
I didn't even know that my child was here. There. Yeah.
Oh.
Didn't even know he was here. And now, mind you, I was 19. Mm-hmm. That was my first, I'll call it my first boo-boo.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the only child that graduated high school.
Okay.
That, like, was making it out. And then I got pregnant once I got to college. So 19, already not understanding pregnancy, because one, I'm already so scared to...
tell your parents and family and...
tell anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to my doctor's appointments and doing all of that, but I never understood that the deeper issue that I was going to face because nobody talked about it.
Yeah.
It's not a thing, you know, because you have people who believe it and then you have people who don't.
Yeah.
So me, so I'm half white and half Mexican. My background you just didn't talk about it. Okay. Not that my parents pushed me away from not talking about it. I don't even think they understood it.
Yeah, you don't talk about what we don't either experience or even the acknowledgement of that you had, because the stigma, right?
Oh, yeah.
It goes into that whole
Let's not have sex. Let's not talk about sex. Sex is taboo.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Right, right. And so then you have a baby and golly, have a traumatic experience with it.
Yeah. And I was the baby of the family.
Okay.
So I'm very, very, Me and my dad are like this. Like he is my rock. He's my everything. So trying to have that conversation with him, right? When I told him I was pregnant.
Yeah.
And then after, and he's still, he was phenomenal. But then after, I just really just remember, after I gave birth, I was so out of it. I wasn't even focused on my mental health because I was never really taught my mental health at all.
The cultural part, right? That goes with all the things. Isn't it? So then we talk, you know, you have the layers, the layers of experience that you don't realize are there until you've hit that wall of that layer.
Yeah. And so as a kid, I was already anxious. I was already going through things as a teenager, you know. I remember when I was like 12, really when I felt my anxiety. And then through my teenage years, battling all of the things, but not even knowing. So just imagine, right?
Yeah.
After giving birth and the impact of the my mental health after giving birth and my body shifting, everything, my hormones, literally everything takes a shift and nobody's still acknowledging the mental health piece after I gave birth. That right there. It's just, I don't even know if I can find the correct word for somebody to fully understand unless you experienced it as a mom.
No, I'm totally right there with you. You know, when we were preparing for this and Cecil said he wanted you to come on and I was like, oh, and he kind of looked like, what is that about? And you know, I had my first child, I was 25, and that was the perfect pregnancy. I mean, she was 8 pounds, 14 ounces. I was like the super mom story, right? I was 25, she was 8 pounds, 14 ounces. I had natural, no epidural, right? So I'm like, I'm the boss, right?
Here we go.
The boss of child rearing, you know? Because when we talk about, and this is what men don't get sometimes, in this culture of child rearing and having babies, women won't admit it, but there's this hierarchy. You know, if you can have a child and it's natural, no C-section, and you have no problems with breastfeeding, you're the best mom in the whole world.
Oh, yeah.
God forbid something else happens and you have to get an epidural or you choose to get one or you have a C-section, then you're rank, I don't know if I want to call it rank. Yeah, you're not like a real mom.
A real mom.
And then, God forbid, you have postpartum, then something is wrong with you.
Yep. You're just, you know, the older generation, I just remember my aunts and just on both sides of the family of like, suck it up.
Like, you're like, it's just the baby blues. Yeah. Like, no.
Why are you crying? Yeah, you're crying because you have a baby. Yeah. And internally, I'm like, no, you do not understand the thoughts that I'm having. And I, you know, I've had some thoughts struggling with depression, but I have these thoughts and then everything that comes with it. Like I just gave pounds. No, so my first son was 9 pounds, 11 ounces.
At 19.
At 19. I was, I was a big girl my whole life.
But when I don't believe it.
No,
I
was.
You came in here, you little bit.
No, so I had, I had weight loss surgery.
Okay.
So, and I decided that after my third son, but
you
I was
good, by the way.
Thank you. So I was 19, huge. I'm talking, my nose swelled up. all of these things. And I had no idea this is what I was going to experience.
Oh, when your shoe size changed?
Oh. Everything. I'm swollen.
Caesar was like, what is going on?
Listen, I'm
on?
Listening to this conversation, and I'm just taking it all. I'm just a therapist today. I'm going to just pass along the therapy.
No, so I'm just big, right? And then after I gave birth, I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm even bigger. Right? On top of that, on top of just dealing with all of the things. And I was a first time mom. Well, and I struggled when I was pregnant because that was my first oops. Mm. So already I didn't even want to talk about I'm about to have a baby.
Yeah.
Because I was the kid that that made it out. Right. Like I graduated high school and I was the first one to graduate high school, first one to go to college. So I was already struggling. So that postpartum that I experienced, mm-hmm. I didn't even know it was postpartum because I didn't grow up understanding mental health. I had no idea that I was even experiencing postpartum because I didn't understand mental health. I've been called a crybaby my whole life because I just was always anxious.
And that was your nervous system.
Yes. So experiencing that with my first child and then having to go back and see my OB during that process of my first son and him explaining what postpartum was, mm-hmm. I'm like, finally somebody, okay, like I'm not crazy.
Yeah, I'm not, seen.
Yes, I'm seen, I'm not crazy. Like it, in a sense of like, okay, like going through postpartum, these thoughts and feelings and stuff are normal, right? Mm. It wasn't until my second son where I really, really understood the effects of postpartum. Mm. Like one, I was already, I graduated and, oh, you know, from,
yeah.
Thank you, from getting my bachelor's and my degree that I was getting. And then I was working in mental health. So I already had that, you know,
yeah.
I know what that looks like. However, when I had my second son, it was during the time when breast is best.
Oh, and you know what? Full transparency, I'm going to be vulnerable. I breastfed both of my babies and I'm a systems person, you know. I can tell you how everything interweaves. And I took a that's when we had Babies R Us and toys, you know. Babies R Us, right?
Those were good toys back in the day.
Yeah. But Babies R Us had parenting classes.
Oh.
And they would have breastfeeding classes and that. And so, you know, when I had Cassidy, my daughter, I was in my doctoral program, master's transitioning to the doctoral program.
Love it.
Right? thank you. And so trying to breastfeed her, and this was 20 years ago, when formula was king. So going through that process and then transition to Aiden. Now, Aiden is probably going to be mad because y'all going to know. I breastfed Aiden till he was about 4 and a half.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But doing that in the midst of a tumultuous co-parenting relationship where that was not supported.
Yeah.
And his, you know.
I can only imagine.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They were, you know, I was threatened, you know, social media is crazy. So, he would make posts on social media and then his friends would say, oh, you need to call children's services. That's sexual abuse, you know.
But
that craziness.
Not understanding the way the body works.
Yeah.
And mothers.
Which contributes to the postpartum. And when you, and to circle back, because my ADHD in this conversation, but when you talk about breast is best, yes, that can be the case, mm-hmm. but when you have postpartum and when you're stressed out,
yeah, full-time job, all these
unrealistic. It has an effect on your milk production,
mm-hmm.
which further makes you feel like
less of a woman. Less in that, right?
See,
there.
I'm loving how we're finishing each other's sentences.
I'm just sitting here less listening of a to woman. This conversation.
Yeah, it makes you feel less than.
Can you imagine being 19 years old? don't understand anything about childbirth, but I just, you know, gave birth, being told that I wasn't a woman because I had to have a C-section.
I believe it. I believe they said that to you.
Oh.
Because, you know, and I tell people, I would tell her how it is. When I had my first child, like I said, I was on the top, right? The top in this hierarchy of birthing children, because everything was natural and everything went fine. We fast forward. I had Aiden at 40, which is a whole nother conversation, girl.
That's a big...
Over some cocktails, yes. 2014 was a summer of bad decisions.
I love it, though.
When we talk about mental health, and that could be a whole nother conversation. But when we get to that, and then my body, you know, I had to have an emergency C-section because... there, you know, was a fibroid there we didn't know.
Oh.
So it was a matter of life or death. Like, we both literally could have died.
Yeah.
But that's traumatic, coming out of that C-section. And the crazy part of my story, brace yourself, girl. I don't numb. So when I go to the doctors, they have to use the lidocaine. Like, I have in my chart, give me the old stuff. So
give me the strongest that you got. Let me tell you what.
Listen here. Okay.
And C-sections, they cut you.
How about when she started to cut me because I was laboring without an epidural because I was trying to do what I did before. Laboring without an epidural, emergency C-section. They're like, we have to hurry up and give you one.
Give me all the drugs.
But
I want them all.
It didn't come into effect in time, but they had to get the baby out. So when she took, I said, you just cut me. And she says, I know you didn't feel that. I said, yes, you did. And she put the scalpel. I said, you just touched my right thigh. And she says, I'm sorry. She says, we have to get this baby out or he's not going to make it. And she says, it's gonna kick in, I promise, but you may feel the first two cuts. Mm. And I did.
I'm surprised you didn't pass out.
And I listen here. When they say see the light, I thought I saw the light and Jesus and the angels coming to get me. But the epidural came into effect, but it lasted longer. Mm. So when I got back in the room, I couldn't feel my legs.
So my epidural didn't work.
Dang.
That's why I had to have an emergency C-section with my first son.
Yeah.
So I was in labor for 18 hours. Labor in 18 hours.
And they don't let you eat.
No.
Isn't that the craziest?
I'm starving over here.
Was
now,
it just ice chips?
No. You can't. I said I was a big girl already. So I'm starving over here, right? Starving. I am so hungry. And I'm in labor for 18 hours because my water broke. Mm-hmm. Lost my mucus plug and everything. So, you know, you hear moms like, oh, instantly. Not me.
Oh.
I'm like, why can't I have been God's favorite? No, he's
in. No. That's how you feel. That is how you feel,
right?
Though. Yes.
So I'm over here starving 18 hours and his heart rate. I dilated to 7.
Mm-hmm.
His heart rate started dropping. So he was breached and something else. I can't remember. But my doctor, I was so terrified of having a C-section because.
They make you feel if you have one.
It wasn't that. It was because I was raised my whole life with hearing, if you do not have natural birth,
you're not a real woman. Oh,
so
no.
That's what that piece ties into. When I had my second son, I was 24 when I got pregnant. Yeah. So graduated, but it was during the time of breast is best.
Oh no.
I didn't get to breastfeed my first son because
I didn't get
any milk. Second son was more aware, right? Like, okay, I know I'm going to have postpartum because they say once it happens with the first one,
it's higher. Again. You're higher prevalence.
Yeah.
What is it called again?
It's a higher prevalence. So the first one, if you have it one time, it's always the second time. You want to make sure that you check because it's a higher prevalence of postpartum happening again with any other child afterwards.
Yes. So I'm over here thinking like, I got this. Yeah. Like, this is my profession. Like, I'm going to do all the steps. I'm going to be good. I'm going to know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because it was during the time, breast is best, I tried to breastfeed him.
And no.
I could not get my milk in. When I mean, it just would not come in. I did every natural remedy. I was going to the health department, and shout out to the health department. I cannot remember the lady.
No, they have the lactation consultants and the WIC. Yeah, they're so really good.
I cannot remember the lady's name, but she was phenomenal. I was there 3 to 4 times a week. Aww. So my middle, he would not latch on correctly all of the time. When I tell you, I drove myself
crazy. Yeah.
On top of, I was already in postpartum. I was, power pumping. So when I tell you, I was at home all day long, because I was going from trying to feed him naturally, right? Mm-hmm. Then I was power pumping,
trying to get milk,
hooked up. Yeah. And then by the time I even got
Man, you pump, you'd be sitting at that pump for 40 minutes and get 2 ounces.
Yep. And then I had to feed him again. Yep. So I'm not even leaving the house. I'm not even getting dressed at this.
Poor thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm already not okay. On top of, in that space of with my first son, I've already been told that I'm not a woman. On top of, I cannot produce enough milk. And I was struggling with, I have another son.
Mm. Look, she's like, girl, I already know, yeah.
I'm like, okay, why can't I have a daughter?
Okay, tell me. No, you got three boys.
Nope, I got three biologically, and now I have.
You had two bonus babies.
I have two
girls.
Bonus. Okay, and okay. Well, I have a daughter and a son. Okay. Yes. So that postpartum, I thought I had it in the bag, right? In a sense of, I know how to work with it, go to therapy, do all the things. However, I stopped myself because I breast is best. I was so focused on, like, I'm going to be a mom. Like, I'm going to be a real mom, right? Like, society is going to see me as that real mom.
Yeah. Yep. Nursing, for me, I found people's true colors, right? And then I think that was the time. I mean, I already was the queen of comebacks, but I really became the queen of the comeback, because people would say things to me when I would be out in public nursing.
I'm really?
Like, yeah. Like, I remember a group of us, we went to Cedar Point. I don't know why I took a 4-month old to see, but it was one of those things I needed to get outside, right?
You start doing some things.
It's like, I just need to go be around adults.
Be around somebody who understands.
So I don't drive myself crazy in this house. And I remember we were at Cedar Point, and a friend of mine, Anthony Bronaugh, we were all together. I was kind of covered up. I was walking, carrying him with that little Moby thing. And people were just like scowling at me. Mm-hmm. And he's like, wow, I see what you mean. Mm-hmm. Like, people really are like scowling at you.
Yeah.
And he's like, all you're doing is feeding a baby. I'm like, yeah.
Because it's not the norm.
Yeah, because it wasn't the norm at the time. Like, if you were breastfeeding, people thought you were like a tree hugger mom.
You were just, you were weird.
Weird, mm-hmm. Yep.
Or in a sense of like, you want attention.
Yes, yep. Yep.
I want attention because I want to feed my child.
Do you know how much a can of formula was?
Okay.
To save money.
Yeah, mine were on Nutramigen.
One of the most expensive formulas out there.
And then it stains everything.
It does.
And my middle, he was called a happy spitter. So he would projectile. So on top of, I got to thank goodness for WIC, because I qualified, even though I work a full-time job, I qualified, and I'm beyond, like, grateful.
Yeah.
His cans of formula was, like, $20-something.
Yeah, and back then, that was a lot.
And then I got to buy new clothes?
Yep.
Because he wants to be a happy spitter. How dare he? No. But I will have to say, when I was breastfeeding my middle, when it was during that time, I got more support from males than I did females.
Oh, girl, go. Yes.
So my sister's going to be so mad that I'm saying this, but I got to call her out. My sister gave me more, issues about breastfeeding in where I was than my dad and my brother. Yeah. There's a time where we were at home, because I still lived with my dad after I had my second son for a little point of time. Mm-hmm. and my baby's hungry. So, you know, pull him out, you know, do all the things. My dad and my brother would be right there, but they're like, she's feeding the baby. Yeah. And my sister was like,
what are you doing?
Right? She's going to be so mad that I'm talking about this. But I, you know, and it was in a sense of like, so the way that we were raised, women are just very conservative. Like our dad raised us, like there's just certain things that you did do and there was certain things that you didn't do. This is just what I think she thinks. Mm-hmm. She just was like, you're pulling
your boob.
Yeah, you're pulling it out. Yeah,
and I would tell people two things. I would say their milk supply first, fun bag second.
Yes.
So the first priority.
Oh my goodness,
milk
I love it.
Bag. Like this is a feeding source. And I remember one time you talk about your sister's going to be upset. My aunt's going to be upset because all the cousins are going to know because we all were there. And it was Thanksgiving and I was nursing Aiden and my aunt's like, I think he was like maybe, might have been one. And she was like, oh my gosh, does he bite? Maybe it was. And I looked at her because it was, maybe it wasn't. No, because our first Christmas, he was maybe like 7 months or so, first Thanksgiving. But she said it loud, like, does he bite? Does he got teeth? You know, he might have one or two teeth. And I looked at her and I was like, do you bite when you suck? Listen, that goes down.
You said this is on Thanksgiving?
Yes. It goes down in the family group chat, okay? Because they were like, oh, you did not say that
and
to
I did.
So-and-so. I did.
And I did. Because it's like the audacity of like, when did this not become normal?
And she was the aunt that I looked up to because she was the first aunt I saw breastfeed. So I was looking at her like, why would you say something to me and you nursed?
I don't think anybody in my family really nursed. Now that I think about it. However, I understand like what you're saying 100% because my sister, when I found out I was pregnant at 19, my sister was the person that I called. I didn't know what I was going to do. So she's always been my person that like, sometimes I can't stand her, but that's siblings.
I mean, that's siblings, yeah.
But she's still like, she's my protector.
Yep.
So for me, I'm over here side-eyeing her like you.
Like girl.
You got the audacity to talk to me about breastfeeding. You're supposed to be supporting me. We are women, right?
Listen.
And I'm getting the support from my dad and my brother who they have no idea, right? Even though like they were both, you know, both dads. But they didn't understand like breastfeeding.
Yeah, the whole process.
And my brother and my dad are just like, she's feeding the damn baby. You know?
I always say women don't need men to destroy women because women do it for themselves.
Yes.
So here's the fun part. I was a child of a mother who had postpartum. So I get to give the perspective of a child from postpartum. So the first 3 years of my life, I lived with my grandma. I did not have my mom the first 3 years of my life. So I was not nurtured. I didn't get the developmental spaces that you're supposed to get. So for the first 3 years of dealing with a mom who I didn't find out until I was a teenager, she had postpartum, which then turned into bipolar depressive. I became the therapist that realized that postpartum affects children as well. Right. So we, as you guys are talking about the mother's perspective of how you guys have to deal with it, the kids have the feelings of the postpartum depression as well. But we'll move on to talk about some co-parenting this time, right?
Oh, goodness. I'm going to just roll my eyes half the time.
I mean, you guys kind of already talked about the co-parenting a little bit. But for you, what was co-parenting like in a healthy way versus the unhealthy way?
Okay. Healthy.
Yeah, tell me the healthy.
So my oldest son has a different father than my two youngest. And my oldest son's father, he's amazing. It wasn't always like that though. Trust me, there was time. I was 19 and he was 18.
Okay.
It took us some time to learn because we were still kids in a sense.
Yeah.
But we figured it out because we were able to get to that point of understanding like, look, we don't really dislike each other. We were kids when we had him and we were just learning. We co-parent phenomenal. even through the times of like we're side-eyeing each other, and I think that really comes with maturity, mm-hmm. But also just understanding like it's not about us. And I will say, he has been with the same woman since our oldest son was 3.
Oh, and you go, boy.
Yes. So that is my oldest son, Elliot's. That's his bonus mom. Aww. She's amazing, phenomenal. When I tell you, even when we don't see eye to eye, we are able to have uncomfortable conversation and still put our emotions aside. Because it's not about us. It's about our baby. Mm-hmm. We have to work together. Our relationship is so healthy. They just had a baby. And I keep her.
I love to hear that.
Yes. And when she got pregnant, I was the second person that she called. Oh. Yes.
Oh, that is a blessing.
And it's such a wild thing. So Elliot is 12 now. So from, you know, age 3 all the way to 12, mm-hmm. every time that I talk about the healthiness of how we exist with, you know, coexist with each other, you will be so surprised the looks that we get and the questions, mm-hmm. yeah. right? What do you mean, mm-hmm. right? When people ask me all the time, like, does he call her mom? Talking, you know, about his bonus mom. And I'm like, he might, but he's allowed, mm-hmm. because let me tell you what, that is also his mom. She loves my baby, our baby,
yeah,
just like her own. She has treated my baby
like
right
hers,
yeah. like her. So that is her baby. It is not about me,
and it doesn't take anything away from her or you.
Not at all.
I think that, you know, and I always tell Cecil too, his co-parenting relationship with his ex-wife mm-hmm. is goals.
Yeah.
And hearing you yeah. talk about that, like that's goals. Like it can happen, you know, mm-hmm. it can happen. You know, I pray, and Cecil knows, like, I wish I had a go-between. My daughter, her father and I are great. We get along great. The second go round, I wish I had a go between.
Maybe it is the second go round.
I think people have different expectations at 40.
Yeah, when you get older. So I waited 4.5 years before I had any more. So the second go round mm-hmm. with the 2, very, very different.
Yeah. You know, and this is what I tell people, especially the young women that I mentor. And the elders tried to tell me, but if you listen to the other podcasts, I will always try to see how soft my butt could get, because I would be hard. But the elders did tell me, don't get into anything, because I was coming off of a breakup. A disappointment of supposed to get married and did not. And then my best friend died that summer. So emotionally, I was a mess.
Yeah.
But I was still functioning and yeah. pushing through and pretending as if I was okay. And there were elders that saw that. Mm-hmm. And so I tell young women, don't rush into anything when you're not emotionally sound.
Yeah.
Because the consequences can last a lifetime.
Yes.
And so now I'm in a situation where the consequence of me not listening, mm-hmm. I am parenting in a situation that is a byproduct of me not listening. Because had I been who you see today,
yeah.
Aiden would probably have a different day.
And it's such a crazy thing when you're vulnerable, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
No one, like, why are you vulnerable right now? Right?
Yeah.
So, and I get that. When I met my 2 youngest's dad, I was at the ultimate high of my life.
Listen,
really.
Listen. We might have to continue this off the record.
Off the record.
Yes.
So it's that emotion piece as women. I'm like, get together.
Yeah.
Come on. Pull back and listen.
Yeah.
Listen to the other people, right? You're not seeing red flags.
Exactly.
But they see them red flags and they're trying to
like, stop.
Yes.
Now, here's the interesting part, because you guys are talking about other people telling you and giving you advice about certain things.
Yeah.
As you guys are talking about that, that's a healing part for most people, right? To be able to have someone in the space to give you info, kind of give you some like insight, like, hey, I see something outside of you. What would you tell the people who are the listeners today? As we're co-parenting and talking about co-parenting, what's one mindful step that they could take?
You have to first accept how you're feeling, but being able to put that feeling aside, because in all reality, it's not about you. It's about that baby, right? That baby, I'm a firm believer, that baby did not ask to be here. So because he did not ask or she asked to be here, it is my job and the other parent's job, regardless if we can get along or not, we have to figure it out for the child.
Yeah.
And just self-checking, like, just because you're having that emote, he or she may have made you extremely mad. I have an obligation, and my obligation is that baby and doing what is best for the baby.
Now, other side of the fence, what about you, right? What would you tell the mother who was 19 or 24 or 25? What would be the mindful step that they would take dealing with some postpartum symptoms?
Oh, getting help, 100%. Reaching out, talking to other women. The people who helped me the most were my therapist. It was my doctor who they did not make me feel less than. So trusting. And then also some of my elders, I will say too, like they didn't always make me feel like I was doing something wrong. But trusting other people who understand, even if they didn't go through the experience. Because I remember I talked to somebody that never had a baby. But because I felt heard, because she had that understanding, she was able to open up like just like a different viewpoint, and that helped me so much.
So even in the spotlight of feeling alone, reach out.
Yeah,
I will say this though, because I got some statistics.
Give us some stats.
Estimated that almost 50% of mothers experience postpartum depression who do not get a diagnosis.
Yeah, because I never had a diagnosis. I just knew I wasn't together.
Yeah.
And I was telling Cecil when we were preparing for this, I hadn't really told anyone, but when I went back to work and excuse me, guys. I went back to work, and it was, I was a professor, so, you know, I could do my own schedule. And I remember calling my daycare lady, Miss Mary. I remember calling her, like, hey, how's Aiden doing? Because, you know, I was still nursing, pumping, all that. She's like, you didn't bring Aiden by? And I'm like, what? And someone said, go look in the car.
Yeah.
And Aiden was, he was in the backseat sleeping. Luckily, I mean, it was in the middle of August. And luckily, I hadn't been in my office too long, because I was telling Cecil, when I see those news and people are like, how can they leave their baby in the car or whatever? When you're struggling with dealing with giving birth and you're in an unhealthy co-parenting space and your mind is just all over the place, yeah, and your body is doing cartwheels.
You don't know if you're coming or going.
You don't know if you're coming or going.
Yeah.
And I thank God that day. I was like, because I could have been one of those women, mm-hmm, that came out hours later and their baby was dead in the car. Yeah. Right.
And thank you for being this vulnerable, mm-hmm, because as moms, we feel like alone, right? Yep. Or what you see in social media, mm-hmm, in all reality, there is so much that we struggle with.
So much.
And my sorority sister.
What sorority?
Sigma Lambda Gamma.
You're a Sigma Lambda Gamma? Yes, oh my Gamma. Goodness. I am an AKA. Yeah. One of my good friends when we were in college was Sigma Lambda Gamma. One of my Jack and Jill sister moms is a Sigma Lambda Gamma.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a pink and purple.
Yeah. Shocking pink and majestic purple. Yep. Yes. my sorority sister. Oh, I may start crying. She's never had kids. She's a therapist. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I've ever really told her thank you.
Yeah.
But.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Listen, if you guys are a listener to this, the emotion in this room is high. So, like, we had that trigger warning. Just know.
She supported me so much, and what I mean, like, supported me, she would check me,
yeah,
and still does, mm-hmm, but when I mean checked me, so postpartum is one of the things that she specializes in.
Oh,
and
wow.
This was before she even, you know, became a therapist. Mm. When I tell you, she would come and just sit with me. She has just taken, you know, I'm coming to get the kids, yeah, and still I could call her, and even if she doesn't like me right then and there, right? When it comes to the babies and my mental health, when it comes to the kids.
Yeah.
It was like she didn't experience it, but she seen it. Like she was watching me and understanding, and she made me feel so seen because the thoughts that I was having,
those thoughts.
I didn't want to shower. I don't want to do any of this. And she was the one that was like, let's go. Yeah. Like, it is okay.
My sister came over, Danny. You know,
yeah.
My sister came over and my milk didn't come in at first. And my niece was one at the time. And my sister nursed Aiden for me. Yeah.
Hearing that, I love.
You know, she nursed Aiden for me, but she, mm-hmm, also said, sister, you stink. You need to go get in the shower.
So one of my other sorority sisters, so with my last son, still could not produce enough. And she also had a baby at the time. So she was helping me. She could produce so much. And one of my friends, too. Yeah. So they would bring me breast milk.
Shout out to the sisters and the sister moms that stand in the gap for women who don't know if they're coming or going.
And there was a lot of people who didn't understand, right? Like, what do you mean you're feeding your baby someone else's milk? Mm-hmm. And in my head, I'm like, do you know what's in formula?
Yes.
No.
Like
oh.
The health. Yeah.
Arsenic.
Oh, okay. Kind of stuff.
Recalls after recalls.
Yeah. Don't be worried about whose milk I'm giving. They're eating.
Right.
Well, as we wrap up, I want to thank you both for your transparency. I just got a chance to listen to the stories of two women who are very strong and resilient through going through postpartum to being mothers. So some of the most courageous things you can do as a parent and as a woman is admitting that you need care, meaning that you need support, and meaning that you need help.
Yes, and you can't pour into your children from an empty well. Take care of your mind, take care of your body, and make sure you have those boundaries in place to take care of yourself.
Yes.
Alicia, what's one thing that you would let mothers, listeners, children, what's one thing you want to give them today?
I want to give them the support and just understanding that it is okay not to be okay. And it is okay to ask for help, because I promise there are so many women out here, mm-hmm, that will support you. And it is okay not to know how to be, you know, to be a mom. Yeah. There's no handbook.
And I kind of wrote one, though.
Oh, well, I need to read it.
Yeah, girl, we got to get
yes. to it. But just, you have the support, and it's okay to be scared. We'll yeah. walk through it together.
Yep, hand in hand.
And learn, because the day and age that we live in, there's always something new.
Always, and it takes a village.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
Whew, can we wipe my face? If this conversation spoke to you, share it with someone who might need a reminder that they're not alone. And if they don't have a village, if you ask one person or reach out your hand, that is the start of creating a village. You know, one thing, we have yes. some questions.
Okay.
Quick question, fire questions. What's one word that you would describe your story?
Beautiful mess.
Okay, bam, that's it. Beautiful mess.
Yes.
How can people get in touch with you? How can they reach you?
You can get in touch with me by contacting me on social media. You can get my phone number.
Okay.
All the good stuff.
Are you accepting new clients?
Well, since I'm in my master's program.
Oh, your master's.
Yes.
Can't. Oh,
but
listen,
when I'm done.
Okay, when she's done. When so we're going to have to, you know, keep an eye out on her. And when she's done, we'll accept
her. We'll make sure we'll shout her out again on one of the next podcasts.
Oh, definitely.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
No, you'll be back. We got more stuff to talk about.
So as you guys have listened to this last part of our episode, I'm going to leave you guys with a mindful minute. It was a pretty heavy episode, so I want you guys to take a moment and just think to yourself as you're breathing in and breathing out. I'll do it together. I want you to say some things with me, a mantra or words of affirmation. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to breathe in through our nose. And we're going to breathe out and we're going to say, I am worthy. I am enough. I am deserving of love. I am deserving of support. It's okay to not be okay. And I need love. And if you need to do it again, as you're listening to this, you can go in through your nose and then out through your mouth. And as you're going out through your mouth, I want you to be able to say, I am loved. I am enough. I don't need to be alone. I'm okay with being social. I don't have to sit in isolation. So as we're doing that in a mindful minute, just remember that as you're listening to this episode, you are loved. So until next time, stay grounded, stay real, keep your mindful edge. You can also check out the Mindful Edge at www.gte.org/mindfuledge and wherever you listen to your podcast at.
And we want to say we love y'all double time. And we also want to thank Chris, who is the dopest producer, Chris Pfeiffer.
Dopest producer for sure.
Talk to you later.
WGTE. Voices around us.